don't.
No.
I don't think so.
No?
No.
Hey, my name is Kira, and I love to draw, and I also play the piano, and I have ASD, also known as Autism Spectrum Disorder. But people usually don't really believe me when I tell them, because apparently all people who have autism should be
a loner.
Only boys can have that, girls can have that. Wear headphones,
or be really
smart.
Be younger.
Only wear the same outfit every day. But that's not me. Or at least, not anymore, and not all of those things. And definitely not as visible or extreme as some films or shows on TV make it seem.
I asked Maria Burks, sociologist and anthropologist.
Those emotions of accusation, of doubt, of denial, was really directed towards the fact that what's going on the outside doesn't really reflect what's going on the inside.
And that made me wonder, what is the representation of someone who has a disability that is invisible? And how can we make it visible? This is Invisibility. Before we can make our disability visible to others, we first need to see it clearly ourselves. And for this, we need a medical diagnosis, which seems very easy and straightforward, but it's not.
So hi, my name is Greta Friesen. I am from Canada, but I've lived overseas in Asia for most of my life. I have been diagnosed with chronic daily migraines and chronic daily headaches. So essentially for the past 4 years, I've been in chronic pain every day, like every waking second.
Because a lot of people around Greta's age have similar symptoms because of puberty, a lot of people think that she's exaggerating or that it will just go away in a while.
It's always hard because like I know so many people have had headaches in the past, and then some people have had migraines, so they kind of think, oh, like, I've had that, it's not too bad. So then it kind of downplays what I go through on a daily basis.
Finding out what exactly went wrong with Greta has been very difficult.
At this point, I think I'll probably be in pain for the rest of my life. Because, like, I went to the Vancouver BC Children's Hospital to their complex pain clinic, and the specialists told me it would be nearly impossible to figure out what's wrong with me since I've already done so many tests and everything's came out normal. Doctors are like, there's clearly something really wrong here, but they're not sure what.
Dr. Maria Burks explains how important it is to have that diagnosis for your own identity.
Not having that diagnosis means disbelief, it means disempowerment sometimes. So interestingly, medical diagnosis also can give you hope, maybe not of a cure or maybe not of recovery, but it can be an important aspect of identity and also your mental health, you know? So you may reject the disability label, but you still want to know what condition you have. And that's important to be able to understand how to look after yourself, how to manage your condition.
And when you don't know, all you can do is trying to figure out why. Why and what? What is it that I have? Why do I have this? What can I do about it? And why me?
It's hard because, like, for the longest time, I've just been searching for any answer that a doctor or naturopath or acupuncturist or anyone, like, to help me the problem was. Because I always thought, like, oh, they'd find out that I have a parasite from living overseas and then I would be fine. Or, like, I was kind of always searching for answers. And then this summer, I just was in so much pain, like, rock bottom. My parents almost wanted to put me in the psych ward just so that I wouldn't kill myself because I'm in so much pain. And then I kind of realized, like, I just have to figure it out. Like, I'm the one who kind of has to get myself healthier just by trying to do little things. So right now I'm just working on, I slowly, like, each week I have a new goal, like, to, like, brush my teeth every day or, like, flush the toilet when I go to the bathroom because it's just so loud that, yeah, or going on, like, an outing each day. So I kind of add these little baby steps to slowly kind of get used to functioning normally, even though I'm in pain.
When you don't have that diagnosis, you can't convince others and you are not recognized as someone with a disability. So all you can try to do is fit into normal standard life.
And then hopefully kind of as I'm getting more into daily life, they didn't say this, but I'm kind of thinking maybe then my body will realize that there's nothing really wrong and slowly, like, my pain will diminish as kind of I regain healthiness.
But what if you have that medical diagnosis? Does it become easier? Do people believe you? This is Lise. She is 21 years old and lives in Belgium, and she has been diagnosed with...
A few examples are lupus, the systemic version, myasthenia gravia, asthma, celiac disease. I also have severe allergic reactions like cortisone, and, well, yeah, celiac is also kind of an allergic reaction.
Liz, her condition is very rare. Her symptoms aren't always as visible, and the effects are very unpredictable and extreme. She can go from being okay to not breathing, having spasms, and fainting, just like that. So people don't always know how to react.
There's a wide range of different reactions when I say I have a disability. Some people simply don't believe me because I don't always look disabled. When I'm in a wheelchair, it's obvious I'm disabled, but on good days I can walk around, so they don't always believe me when I say I am disabled. And then there are people that feel sorry for me because I am disabled. There are people who, for some reason, apologize. And then there are just the ones that try to be there for you, but don't actually try to pay attention too much to the disability. And then the final ones are the ones that just ignore it all and just want to interact with you without a disability.
Even teachers have trouble believing her.
There were a few teachers who told me things like, don't do that bullshit in my class, referring to fainting and seizures, or starting to tremble, which I have no control over whatsoever. There have also been teachers that called me attention hogs or
even swore at me when I fainted or something like that. I've been called a lot of different things because people didn't believe me.
But Liz has found a way to make her disability more visible to others with her two service dogs.
Milo, close the bench. All the way. Good.
Coda is a miniature American Shepherd, also called a mini Aussie, and Milo is a Chihuahua Pelo Longo.
And even though they weren't meant to be service dogs, she still gets a lot of support from them.
He was bought by my grandparents originally as their dog, but then I ended in the hospital for about 2 weeks, and they gave me him as a gift to train with originally. And he helped me through the first very, very hard period of a lot of surgeries, a lot of hospitalization and such things.
But most people don't recognize a service dog. So we still haven't found a way to make our invisible disability visible to others. Which means we have to keep on looking. With an invisible disability, there also comes a choice, because you get the, I say privilege, but not really a privilege, to choose whether people will know that you have a disability. And for somebody who has a disability, this is something very personal. It's like your own little secret. That you sometimes have to share because of the situation you're in or because of certain rules or regulations. But from time to time you get to decide, like, do I want this person to know my secret? And it's not just that question. There are a lot of questions to be answered before you can tell somebody. Like, should I tell this person? Do I want to tell him? What will happen if I tell them? Do I want them to know my secret? And you can't answer all those questions before you tell them because you don't know. You simply don't know how people will react. Meg is 33 and lives in Texas, and her story began when she was 17.
I wanted to go to Sam Houston University and major in piano performance or teach. I had already, you know, met with the head of that department, and he had heard me play piano and was like, wow, you're amazing. So it was, you know, I was set. Like, I was headed out to a beautiful future and was going to be in college for the normal 4 years. And, you know, I wasn't planning on having this setback.
Meg's whole life changed because of one little mistake.
I went in to get my wisdom teeth removed on July 20th, 2004, and we thought it was just going to be a routine surgery, and something went terribly wrong, and afterwards I slept for about a week straight, and since I had never had a surgery before, my parents thought that was normal, and then come to find out I was resedating and my brain was injuring itself over and over and over, and so I just had a lot of psychological issues after that, and doctors said I would never be normal again.
What exactly went wrong during the surgery is still not clear till this day, but what we do know is that Meg now has a brain injury which causes her to have episodes, is what she calls it. And when she has this episode, life just seems like a game to her, and she sees things or believes things that aren't there or just don't make sense at all, but she believes them, and this has changed her life tremendously.
For the first couple years, all my parents could do was just take care of me. I just was not functioning correctly. I mean, basically just went off the edge into the deep end, and it was just hard for me to even function as a normal human being, so they had to take care of me. And then after that, I was in and out of the hospital, the mental hospital, for probably every year for a while, and then now it's been every 2 years. But as long as I'm on a certain medication, I'm okay and I'm stable. But if I get off that medication, then I don't do well.
This also played a big role in her relationship with her parents.
I mean, my mom has gotten caretaker exhaustion. She's a nurse, and she's had to just, you know, walk by me through it all. And whenever I have an episode, she has to fly here because she lives in San Diego, California, and she has to take me to the hospital. And it's really stressful on everyone, like, to watch someone you love go through that. It basically aided my parents in getting a divorce because it was just really, really a strain on their relationship. And then my dad killed himself 2 years ago. And I think that it had a lot to do with me going through this and him having to watch. And it was just a lot. I mean, you know, it's hard on a parent to see their child suffer.
And this was only the beginning, because after this, a lot of things happened which made it seem impossible for Meg to tell anybody what she had, because she was just afraid of the stigma and afraid of how people would react to it.
My mom wanted me to get on disability for this. She was like, you know, you deserve to get money every month to help you out because, you know, your life is hard. And I was like, no, like, I refused. I was like, you know, I want to fight to have as much of a normal life as I possibly can, you know. But sometimes I think I wonder if I'll ever be able to, you know, be married healthily, you know, because of this issue. You know, it's just difficult all around. When it's in your brain, like, nobody can see that. Nobody has any idea what you're thinking, and they don't know how to help that. And there's also a huge stigma against it. I mean, just people don't understand it, and they just blanket statement it and say that, oh, you're just crazy. And, you know, like, it's not that simple. I mean, your brain is an organ and it gets sick just like everything else.
Because of things that happened in the past, Meg now decides not to tell anybody. This being negative reactions from her work environment, but also the lack of trust in the medical system in Texas right now. But she was brave enough to tell her story to me. And in the end, I asked her if she was trying to hide her disability. This is what she answered me.
I do. I mean, I want to be normal, but at the same time, like, I want to help people. So if telling my story and coming out in the open and shining a light on it is going to help someone else who has gone through the same thing, then yeah, you know, I would rather it be known and help someone out, you know?
So, we've now heard the story of three different people. We've heard Meg, Lies, and Greta. And they all seem to have a similar story, where either friends, work, or family, or even their teachers wouldn't believe them in some situations, or didn't make allowances for them, or just didn't adapt. But why is it so difficult? This is a question that I've been trying to answer this whole podcast. Why is it so difficult for people to believe that somebody has a disability that is invisible? I went out on the street to ask a few people if they would believe me.
Would you believe me if I told you I have a disability?
No, I don't.
No.
I don't think so.
No?
No.
It's funny how when I ask them why, they all seem to answer this.
Because you talk to anyone else and no, I don't know.
Because you don't seem like somebody who has a handicap.
Because you don't look like it.
So I am back again with my first question. How can we make an invisible disability visible? So I asked Dr. Maria Burks, and this is how she responded.
Well, there's no such thing, you know. So, we talk about hidden disabilities. So some people don't like to use the word invisible. They use hidden disabilities. And although we use the word invisible disabilities, I don't think there's a representative person for that.
So maybe there isn't a way to make it more visible, and maybe we shouldn't, because as I said, it's a secret and you don't have to make it visible for everyone and anyone to know. But there should be a way for people to believe you. Do you? Do you believe me when I tell you that I have an invisible disability?